Okay, so before I even start, I would like to acknowledge a number of colleagues that have worked on this project. In particular, at the very top, Karine Prunera is an intern who worked for us for 5 months. She implemented the first version of the model. She did quite amazing work in parameterizing the model I'm going to show. So the model I'm going to talk about gives us an opportunity to have a system dynamic view of basically the ecosystem we have been talking about all day. System dynamics is fundamentally about trying to understand how affecting one component of the model might influence the other components as well as the overall functioning of a system. Now, obviously, how components interact is something we need to deal with in our daily life, even outside work, and in particular for an ecologist, this is the fundamental component of the training. So why is there a discipline called system dynamics, and why would we use a computer model to try to get an understanding of this? The reason is that from the psychological literature, we know that even the best minds start to be in trouble when in the system there are more than three or four variables interacting with one another. And in the problems we try to study, we have a number of groups. We have difficult things to understand, like exponential growth thresholds that Matt will talk about soon, and both positive and negative feedbacks. So it becomes extremely difficult, even for the best scientists, to get an intuition about how a system can respond to all possible threats that the system might undergo. The other reason why system dynamics is useful is that, at least the way I like to see it, is a framework where we need to be very clear about telling the framework what we know about the system. And we need to do it in such a way that it can be written in some more or less rigorous form. And once we have made this effort, what we get as a benefit out is a way to testing our understanding. If the system does something that is unlike our intuition or unlike what we see in the field, that means that somewhere there is a problem. Either our knowledge was not good enough, or our intuition is not good enough, or the model is not good enough if it doesn't show what we see in the real world. So it's a way to test to what level we have actually understood the processes we are studying. Okay, this part I'll go very quick because we have been several talks and mentioned this before, but one of the things we want to understand is how the system shifts between stable state, between a coral-dominated and a macroalgae-dominated system. The literature says that this shift is not continuous, but there is some kind of tipping point. In fact, some papers suggest that there is an hysteresis, so that if the system flips, and if we want to flip it back to a coral-dominated state, we need to do more than just undo the stressor that led to the first shift. The literature also says that the balance between coral versus macroalgae-dominated system might be controlled by the presence of herbivore fish which predate on macroalgae, and as a result, they affect the competition between coral and macroalgae. So if we think about a three-component system, and we can think about a ternary diagram. Anyway, so in this triangle, each point in the triangle shows the weight of the three component. In this case, it's a predator, macroalgae, and coral in the system, where the biomass of the three components is normalized according to some criterion. So, for example, a point there, if we want to know, okay, what's the weight of the predator component on the system, we just draw a parallel line that is parallel to the line that is opposite to the vertex, and then we're going to read the weight in biomass of that component. And if we want to know what's the relative component between each pair of the three components of the system, we draw a perpendicular line to the axis, and we go and read there how the relative weight of each pair. If the amount of herbivore was not affecting the balance between coral and macroalgae at all, then we would expect that while the biomass of a predator decreases, the system would move perpendicularly down to the axis that shows the balance between coral and macroalgae, because that balance would stay the same. If, however, the predator does affect the balance, then we would imagine that the system would move towards the macroalgae and basically show that there will be an increase in the size of macroalgae in the system. Now, not everyone in the literature agrees that this is what's happening, and it's hard, of course, to verify, because we have no system in the real world where there are only three components. There are always some confounding processes, and this is why the model we are using here has more groups. So we are trying to model the competition between coral, turf, and macroalgae. We have two herbivore species which feed on macroalgae and turf. We have one predator that feeds on both, and finally we have pressure on the system given by fishing. So the model has been developed. We just started to use it. So if we go back to the framework of what knowledge we put in the system, we have a number of equations. This is basically the model itself. This is more or less textbook ecological modeling, so it's standard. What makes it specifically related to the regions we are studying is the value that we give to the parameters in the model. Here is where Karine put a lot of time in her internship. And the way we approach it was to try to be as flexible as possible from the modeling perspective. So for example, if we want to model the growth of turf relative to the competition with biomass, the equation, the textbook tells us that we need a magical parameter to put in the equation. If we go and ask the field ecologist what that parameter needs to be, we normally don't get an answer, because that parameter does not have a direct interpretable meaning when you go in the field and you measure things. And so when we reverse the process and ask, okay, how would you explain to us how you see the competition between macroalgae and turf, we got a sentence in plain English like that, with a little bit semi-quantitative, which allowed us to change the formula that describes the growth of turf. So this is a way to try not to be too constrained by the structure of a model, to be flexible in the communication between modeler and field ecologist, and then make the model that is underlying the system dynamic look like what the field ecologists see when they go and measure things. Karine has put quite a lot of effort on this, and we changed several components of the model as a result of this interaction. So at the moment, the model requires is 27 parameters. The percentage of parameters, depending on where they come from, is reflected there. Some comes from field measurements, some from other models, some from the literature. The purpose in the next few months is, of course, to increase the number of parameters that come from field measurement. And you know, I saw a lot of presentation today that can help us in that direction. Now, when we go to testing our understanding, we just started, because the model, we started to use it recently, so the results are very preliminary. But just to give you an idea, this is a plot that Matt is going to discuss soon. In blue, we see some field measurement of biomass of parrotfish on the X versus microalgae on the Y in blue. And in red are some model results just by tweaking two parameters, so it's very preliminary. There is not much to, not many conclusions to draw out for this. It's just more or less a statement that the parameters range is roughly okay as a starting point, and now we can improve with a little bit more tuning. This is very simple sensitivity analysis. On the right here, we have how much the model behavior changes by change of single parameters. And on the left, the list of the parameters that affect the model behavior the most. The good news is that 8 of these parameters are responsible for most of the variation in the model. So most of the effort in the next few months will be to focusing on those parameters. And finally, this is a result just from a few days ago. These are 200 completely random runs of the model. So there has been no tuning, no searching for specific behavior. And I just wanted to have a look, okay, how do they appear once I plot in the ternary plot that I showed before. The dots are mapped as a function of the parameter which has the most influence on the model behavior. And big dots means that reflect a high value for a parameter that determines how much microalgae can outcompete coral. So the bigger, the easier it is for microalgae to outcompete. So just a very initial interpretation of these very simple results. There seems to be two behaviors here. In one case, there seems to be a confirmation of what the literature suggests. If microalgae can dominate coral, then when we decrease the biomass of the predator, it goes down, the system actually moves towards macroalgae so that there is increased dominance of macroalgae on coral. However, if it is difficult for macroalgae to dominate over coral, then we get to a point where increasing in macroalgae provide more food for the predator, which can grow. Which makes sense. So as a very tentative first result, it looks like we have two dynamics. In one case is top-down dominated when macroalgae can dominate coral, and the other case bottom-up dominated when the opposite happens. So I would like to conclude going back to this simplification of the framework of thinking. Okay, we have a model, we need to put something in the model, and we put what we know, and we get a way of testing our understanding. There is a sentence that I really like that says, if I can't explain something, it means I don't understand it. The better I understand something, the more ways I have to explain it. And this, I think, if I go back to the example I showed before, it was because the model and understand the model that we're able to ask the same question in different ways to the field ecologist. And it's because the field ecologist understood the process that we're studying that we're able to explain it to us in such a way that we could convert it into a better equation for the model. And on the right-hand side, there is an even a more extreme view of the same statement from a famous logician that said, if I can't code it, I don't understand it. And this is more or less the point. If what comes out of the model is something that doesn't make intuitive sense or it doesn't reflect what is in the field, that means somewhere there is a mistake either in the model or the information we put in the model. So I think that if we, as a team of modeler and non-modelers, take this framework in mind, I think we can all improve the model and then really sit in front of this model and try to see if our understanding of how we think the different rifts function is reflected in the knowledge we have coded. Thank you. Yes, so the way I see it is going iterating between a few things. First of all, getting a better understanding of the parameters ranges for the models. Then go back to data like the ones that Matt is going to show soon. More field measurement to validate to what extent the parameter ranges of the model are correct. And then go back to run the model under different scenarios and see if what this very simple model says reflects what we think happens in the region. The idea is not to have a model to predict the behavior of a system, but is a check for all of us to see if our understanding of a system gets reflected in what we put in a model.
This model you hear about from the Caribbean perhaps initially, and then there's a lot of talk about this kind of thing and with the predator and so forth in it as well, and I kind of wonder if the people who first dreamt up this idea came from a place where maybe the herbivores were being fished. But generally speaking, I think the herbivores don't get fished in Australia. We're fishing the predators. So if we're fishing the predators of the herbivores, then wouldn't we be expecting that the human influence would be to increase the herbivore,
yep.
therefore decrease the algae and improve the coral. And I kind of wonder why the idea gets so much traction in a place like the Great Barrier Reef, for example, where constantly there's hammering about the level of fishing, but the fishing is on piscivore fish, not on herbivorous fish.
I think you're right, and this was the, you know, that silly animation that I showed at the beginning was trying to reflect. Yes, if you're killing the predator, you should do exactly the opposite of what the original literature said, which the original literature was basically focusing on this part only. That's why, you know, we purposely got a bigger model in our case in order to study all these kind of dynamics. And of course, you know, here we have competition between three components here. So we need to keep in mind what affects this is going to affect this and this, and in turn it's going to affect that, which is also food for that. So, you know, it's definitely not as simple as modeling only these three components.